Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back and Happy New Year. And that debt is still fraud, and it is still now or never. And we still need to continue our pursuit of learning, praying, and acting. And it is all about, and still and always will be, about full compliance of the Constitution. There is a huge abyss between a constitutionalist and a conservative. I truly believe that. I believe that you may have conservatives out there that may be constitutional, but if they're not making and only making constitutional arguments, they're only clouding the discussion. But that all being said, I want to just kind of dive into today's show, because typically what I do, I don't usually create a separate New Year's show. I usually just play the same, you know, content I played on New Year's Eve that helps everybody go through, you know, how to set effective goals. So hopefully those of you that have decided to make some improvements in your life have actually laid out the necessary documentation and put the processes in motion so that you can be effective in obtaining your goals. Because if you aren't planning, you are already out to fail, because they say, you know, failing to plan is planning to fail. Anyway, so I've asked Sean to join us today and kind of discussing the intent of the show. I've not had the liberty of having such a co-host since Tammy. Well, I've had Paul and Tammy, and Tammy has gotten involved, but with Sean and his availability, I figured that, you know, let me just abuse him a little bit more. So welcome back, Sean.
You didn't say anything about abuse, sir.
Well, I'm just trying to be self
listening.
I'm just trying to be self-effacing. It's not that I try to abuse. What I meant by that is I'm just trying to take advantage of your thoughts and so forth, because I don't think that you're an unreasonable man. And I don't think I'm unreasonable. I just think that we all think differently, and having another perspective really helps. So I believe that we do think in the same terms and same context, and I think we see the same kind of solutions. So the bottom line is, I've been doing this show. I started doing radio in 2013, and on September 17th, on Constitution Day of 2016, I launched the Reclaiming the Republic radio show. And so I've been doing this now. This will be the 10th year of solid broadcasting. In other words, on a regular basis, where I did some radio broadcasting and other radio interviews and so forth. But for the most part, the Reclaiming the Republic started 10 years ago. And so this is kind of like, you know, wow, well, 10 years, that's a lot. As a matter of fact, sometime during this year, I will hit my 2000th episode. And I think I've already mapped it out to somewhere maybe in March or April. But nevertheless, it's not about quantity, it's about quality. And one of the things I've tried to avoid is just yammering about conservative ideas and so forth, where today it's kind of like really open topic, and not necessarily open, because I've kind of laid out already later in 2025, it was a few months ago, what the content we were going to cover. The whole point of this show is to educate. This is not a fusion of education and entertainment. This is literally a program where we challenge you, the listener, to actually pull these documents down, and in the documents, if there's not a direct link to a cited, academic cited source for that document, then let me know, because I want to make sure I have them on all of them. But it's a good chance I missed it in one. Because, you know, when you're compiling stuff and you're putting a few documents together, I may have forgot to put the link in it. So don't worry. You can always go get the link yourself, and there's easy ways of doing that. But nevertheless, the whole point is to provide you the academic documents that you read along with us so that you actually now can say, I've read the Articles of Association, Articles of Confederation. I've read the Constitution. I have read not the whole ratification debates, but most of the ratification debates. I have read highlights out of the ratification debates, highlights out of Madison's notes. So in other words, I'm far better read than the person that hasn't even read anything. If you have been read on these documents, then you have a better understanding, and you're better apt to become a profound understander or somebody that has a profound understanding of the Constitution. And those are the type of people we need. I don't want you to think like me. What I want is I want you to base everything you understand our government should be based on that Constitution, how the framers explained it. Now, we can argue whether, you know, I'm right and wrong regarding who we should be listening to and so forth, because I believe that, you know, if you look at contract law, if you look at, you know, the accepted conventions of what to do and how to do in setting processes, then you're going to follow those who were the proponents that were their arguments that were accepted. It would be antithetical to support those arguments that were rejected, like the anti-federalists. So anyway, as we move forward, I wanted to kind of have this conversation with Sean, since we're looking at this year ahead. And, you know, this is really completely dynamic, because I'm making this up as I go along. But, you know, Sean, I want to make this show an integral, you know, viral show where people that are thirsty, and as a matter of fact, people that at least initially getting interested in learning, start taking advantage of this show. Because our illiteracy is killing us. As people sit and watch all the crap that's happening that should not be happening, because the government that is doing all of this, whether it be your local, county, state, or federal government, they do not have the authority to allow these things to happen. So what we need to do is we really need to help people become literate. Because if we're literate, then we can all of a sudden say, you know, hey, hold on here. They're raising the minimum wage, and we shouldn't even have a minimum wage. And challenge the constitutionality of minimum wage. And start challenging the constitutionality of everything. Because if we're focused on full compliance with the Constitution, that's what we start doing. And as a matter of fact, you become the most predictable person in the room, because every time you stand up, they're going to say, okay, so this is unconstitutional as well, right? Yeah, because almost everything they do is unconstitutional, because they're not supposed to be doing, the federal government's not supposed to be doing anything that would really affect our everyday life. When the framers were talking about the Constitution, they said that the federal government and everything it was going to do really would have very little impact other than war and maybe the taxation to, you know, to pay for that. But for the most part, it's supposed to be pretty benign. It's not supposed to be that active in our life. The government that's supposed to be the most active in our life is supposed to be our local government. And that's not the case. That is definitely not the case. So, Sean, your thoughts on, if there was going to be a show that would probably be, you know, because it was my desire to try to create the most important show for America, which is this. I believe that there are really good shows out there that, you know, I identify, you know, like Stossel or 60 Minutes used to be a really good show where they identify corruption and these types of things, but they don't necessarily identify the solution. And so I think, you know, you're being disingenuous if you only show people the negative, the, you know, the corruption, the problems, without actually saying there's a solution. And there is. So how can I, and how can, you know, since you're participating in this, how can this show become that most important show for America?
I think you're right on track with the idea that the constitutional illiteracy is a problem.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of quotes that you can go back to, but one of my favorite is the price of freedom is eternal vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government was instituted, you know, and we always talk about a compact between the states. Governments are instituted to guard people's liberty, mm-hmm. not to determine people's liberty or interpret people's liberty. They're to guard people's liberty.
Right.
So what we need is people to understand. And you can see nowadays people just looking everywhere for answers because they it's hard to believe the extents that we've gotten to with the immigration and the just we went through COVID and now just today there's $18 billion on the tally board for corruption and fraud in Minnesota that's coming straight out of our pockets and the government was pretty much facilitating it. Mm-hmm. The government was facilitating the invasion and people don't understand how this could be happening. And so they blame, they get into this tribalist thing where, oh, it's that side, you're doing this wrong. You only care about the rich people. And then the other side is, oh, you only care about, you know, this minority or these marginal, supposedly marginalized people when we're all equal under the law.
Uh-huh.
And the government doesn't have the authority to even involve themselves
right.
in the majority of what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand how our government is intended to function and their authority. It's been turned into this overarching, like a god that has no mercy and no grace and, you know, no principles. It's just mob rule, but they tell you mob rule, but it's actually a minority rule of the mob.
Yeah, and so you bring up a good point. So let me give you a good highlight on what you just said. So the liberals years ago when it came to illegals coming here, they called out the conservatives for bringing and allowing the illegals to come in here, which is why Obama and Clinton deported illegals because they were basically a tool for corporations to exploit them for labor. Now, the liberals have said, hey, if they're going to exploit them for labor, we're going to exploit them for elections. And so, bottom line, you may find one way or the other, whether it's the education, illegal immigration, what have you, there have been positions that both sides have taken that are equally reprehensible. Because bottom line, the Constitution doesn't allow it, like education. Whether you want to have a moral curriculum in school, basically, or an immoral, you know, education back and forth on just the fundamental basis. The bottom line is the Constitution does not empower the federal government to be involved and to have created the education system that we have today. It needs to be fully dismantled. Fully dismantled. And that's the constitutional point, not the conservative point. Because, oh, no, we have to have school. Yeah, of course we have to have school. But we have to make sure that the school is proper and it serves our needs, not serving the design of, I'll call it social engineering. So anyway, so you're absolutely right that everybody kind of looks at, you know, oh, well, you're doing this because technically the conservatives and the liberals are just two sides of the same coin. They're the opposite sides, but they're and when I really look at, you know, all the different factions today as a party, it's not like nobody's, you know, yammering within the Republican Party over, you know, constitutional compliance. You got the people for the convention of states, oh, we need to convene a convention. That's not going to obtain constitutional compliance. It's just like the, you know, the log cabin Republicans wanting homosexual marriage or whatever. All of these are just factions, which has basically taken the coin into a multi-faced die. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, you got the six-sided die, right, that you play with dice, you know, for, you know, Yahtzee or blackjack, or not blackjack, but you know what I'm talking about, craps. But then there's these new advanced die that have, like, 12 sides, you know, that they use, like, in Dungeons and Dragons. You've seen those, right?
I have.
Yeah, and so, you know, the more factions, the more sides to the same die, which makes the die far less effective in coming with the real outcome that you need, because everybody has to have their opportunity to be face up instead of putting what really needs to be face up, which is the Constitution. Hopefully that makes sense metaphorically. I think that's probably a pretty decent metaphor.
Sounds good.
Okay. So you think that this is the best way to go, is to provide the documents and read through them. And by the way, you do a great job, and so does Tammy. Reading through these things and helping people take the time. Because, folks, when you really listen to the show, I mean, it may be 45 minutes or 55 minutes a day, but there's plenty of time where we – and just cut through those things. Just, you know, fast forward to, okay, now they're reading. And just read along with us. At a minimum, by doing that, you're actually seeing for yourself, and the words start to make more sense to you than they do while you're driving along listening. There's very few people that, you know, really take the time to focus on what's being said. It's just, you know, just sound in the air. It's like listening to music. You know, and you may be catching the, you know, the good gist of the conversation or the content, but it's not the same. And I truly believe, and I have found a huge difference when I've gotten people to read the documents, how much more buy-in a person has. I mean, you've read these things, and I think it's really made more sense to you by doing so than just hearing people talk about it or hearing it, right?
Right. And I compare it to reading scripture. Okay. And I mean, you can read scripture alone and, you know, contemplate and pray, and the Holy Spirit will help you to interpret it. But when you share that with someone and you start getting into conversation, that's what I was going to say. Reading the documents always makes me have more questions about what exactly is meant, and you know, what they were comparing things to in the scenario, and, you know, what the circumstances were. And I think when you go through that in an expository manner, when you describe the atmosphere and the current circumstances of when the document was created and what was going on at that time, it helps people to put those things into perspective and understand, have a better understanding. Like I said, when I read them, I get more questions of, okay, well, like in the Declaration of Independence, when they're laying out all these things, then you look back at the history before that and you see, oh, okay, well, these events occurred and this led to their way of thinking and where they went with this.
Right. Okay, so it's a good thing to do because you do get more out of it. As a matter of fact, I encourage anybody to go read these things on their own. The reality is, I mean, getting people to read the scriptures today is far harder than it should be. As a matter of fact, you know, I know I'm going to offend people, but as I look at the majority of the people that are Christians, many of them have never read the scriptures. They go to church, they listen to the sermons, they obtain opinions on what they hear, but they've never really read the scriptures, you know, through and through, from cover to cover, that type of thing. So doing it on a regular basis is obviously necessary, and especially in, you know, this is not a physical world, it's a spiritual world we live in that is physical. And so for us to maintain that spiritual paradigm, it is imperative that we read the scriptures, because it's so easy to lose context spiritually in this world. It's the same thing with our government and our founding documents. So you're right. Amen. Absolutely. So somebody should be reading them, but when it comes down to it, nobody has taken the time to canonize our founding documents. I mean, there are some courses out there, and there's some people that teach at Hillsdale and so forth. And I'm here to tell you that there's not a course out there that teaches the Constitution that you will walk away with a full understanding of exactly what we need to do to take this government back and to start working at the local level and all of that. In other words, there's nobody that's actually said, you know, Hillsdale College does not have a solution. They just teach you what they want you to know.
Right. And it's like you were talking about with the denominations.
Right.
It's the same thing. Whatever fits what we're, our narrative and our agenda of what we think the way things should be, mm-hmm. that's how we're going to teach you these ideas.
Right.
Not just, bam, here's the documents. This is what it says. And if you don't understand part of it, here's where they discussed it and debated it and got to this point. Ratification debates.
Right. Okay, so when we look at what we're doing, then, you know, this is one of the reasons why. And I don't want to go through the list. As a matter of fact, if you look at last year's podcast, we're kind of followed that same vein where we're going to start off chronologically. Of course, tomorrow we're going to cover the Tory Acts. But before we hit the Tory Acts, like we've never done before, we're going to cover the Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights. So what we want to do is really give you a chronological layout of how our government evolved from the British monarchical theocracy. Technically, the British monarchical theocracy evolved from the Empire of Rome and then the Roman Catholic Empire to create then the British Empire. And so as we look at this evolution, hopefully this starts making sense for everybody. Because now we can start seeing that what we ended up discarding or what we ended up completely changing out of the government that we had, people should not even be bamboozled into believing these concepts of jural assembly, doctrines of the lesser magistrate, all of these types of things that are, I'll just say it, archaic. Those things fit in the monarchical doctrine of the British theology, where under common law of England itself, where the Bible was the supreme law of the land, then these rights were afforded. When the Constitution became the supreme law of the land, we had even more rights afforded and we had more protection because we literally limited government. Our government could only do these very things, only these things. The Bill of Rights really doesn't mean anything because bottom line, if they're going after your speech, if they're going after your, you know, your religious expression, the real question is this a violation of the Bill of Rights or is this a violation of the Constitution? Because the Constitution did not delegate them the power to regulate our speech or to regulate religion and in any way. That goes back to the ratification debates of how they said we don't need a Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights are only a further declaratory restriction. I mean, we only delegated these things to you, federal government. This is all you can do. But don't think about doing these other things. So the question is, as we, you know, as we look at where we are and what we need to do, you know, how is it that we can move forward? Because I look at the different paths. We've talked about the paths on the show before. You weren't a part of that when we were hosting. I think we hope, you know, this was when Tammy was co-hosting. And so we talked about using the courts, the party, using these different processes to, you know, to get our government back in the right direction. And so we kind of really beat the ground on this to help everybody understand. And we're going to be running out of time. So when we come back from the break, I'll let you opine and say whatever you want to. But when we go through these seven paths, clearly, none of them, if you laid them out onto paper and said, okay, you do this, 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 and this, none of them actually get rid of all the every whit of unconstitutional government, role, responsibility, power, blah, 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 property, all of these things that are violations of the Constitution, none of them do that. So when we get back, what we're going to do is I'll let you kind of dive into this, because we're dealing with a bunch of conservative patriots that are going down all these different paths, and they have no idea, other than the fact that they may be making their life a little better, they're not solving the problem. What is it we want to do? We just want to... Well, let me finish the thought when we come back from the break. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just kind of restate the obvious, because this show is not one to give you entertainment. This show is not one to be meaningless. We're here to try to give you a solution, the only solution, that's within the Constitution and the process that we're literally following our forefathers in what we need to do. It's called interposition. Interposition is the initial process of fully obtaining the nullification of every law, role, responsibility, power, what have you, that the federal government has assumed. Even the courts, even the president, even the states. So, you know, when we getting back to what I was saying before we went into break, is, you know, what is it? What is it that we really want to do? Because there are way too many people that are all in on the Convention of States, all in on the sovereign citizen movement or the secession movement, general assemblies, all in on going into court. Boy, I've learned so much of how to do affidavits and so forth. I know this, and I can do this because I've been doing this for 30 years. Wow. That does not, you know, you've just wasted 30 years of your time on a process that will not fix the problem. The party system is integral to the solution, but currently by design, the party itself will not, cannot, and has no intention of solving the problem. So, what do?
We educate our fellow Americans on their duty, responsibility, and authority as citizens.
Okay.
To take back their local communities and restore constitutional compliance.
Yes.
Because all of those other things that you talked about, like you said, are not, they're not solutions.
Right.
They're just more red tape and empty avenues to where you're just condoning this overreach.
Yeah, so I've given, you know, conservative entertainers grief. You know, from this show, Glenn Beck went out to, what is it, Thelma, Mississippi, I think. They all went out and got onto a bridge, and, you know, they you know, here's a large group of people. I don't know, was it a million? I have no idea. I know that he did a 9/12 rally in D.C., you know, and that there itself was, you know, a large attended group. I mean, there were lots of people. Boy, if we had that kind of influence, if we had people that were actually following, going out, I mean, there were a lot of people that didn't make it that wanted to be there. Same thing at Thelma. And what did they actually get? What was the outcome? Because here I'm going to insult people, because you really got nothing. You spent money and you actually made friends, that all like-minded friends and good people, and you were a part of an event that made you feel good. But government is still going recklessly off the cliff.
Even more every day.
Okay, so, you know, at what point, this is like the, I see people get involved. They, that's it. I'm not going to take it. You know, at that one point in their life, they say, okay, I can do something now. I'm going to get involved. So they go off and they join the party and they realize the party is just not solving the problem. And they just beat themselves up, you know, running into the wall over and over and over again, trying to say, we got to do something. We got to do something. And then either they get, I'll just say, indoctrinated into believing what they're doing is good, or if they maintain their perspective and objectivity, they realize, you know, this is just an absolute waste of time. And which is one of the reasons why most people look at the parties as completely corrupt. I mean, there are more independents today, people that claim to be independent, than Republican or Democrat. And yet the two-party system still controls access for politicians to get, or for people to get into the political seats. Why is that? Because it's all about control. They're not here to, you know, make it so the good people can get in. They want to make sure that the people that get in are going to maintain the course. They're all about protecting their control. So, so the whole point of today's show was to basically, hopefully, convince people that if you're not actively broadcasting and selling, because I don't do promos here and I don't have sponsorships, because it's not about money. It's not about money for me. It's about me dedicating and consecrating my time and serving you with these documents. And this is not my work. This is clearly, you know, our forefathers' work and the hand of Providence basically inspiring them and leading them down this path to the Constitution. So I take no claim other than trying to do right by him, trying to do right here. So I can go to my grave and, you know that, you know, what more could I do? I could, you know, go into the town square and shoot everybody up, or light myself on fire. And wow, people read about that, and then, you know, that'll be a final statement, but that is not teaching you what you need to know and do. So here's the conundrum. So this is the big frustration that I have, because, you know, I'm constantly fighting, you know, over, you know, these ideologues, whether it be in social media or in the town square, it doesn't matter. They're out there and they believe that they're one of their paths, Convention of State folks. Let's pick on them. The Convention of State folks believe that they need to create these amendments and that will fix everything. Oh, we'll redefine the Commerce Clause. Now, because they say that the Commerce Clause is one of the biggest problems we have, because it's been used to actually, you know, for the federal government to assume powers. Now, it's not that they're wrong. The Commerce Clause has been used to for the federal government to assume all sorts of unconstitutional powers. But it doesn't need to be redefined, because the Constitution says, or the Commerce Clause in the Constitution says, Congress shall have the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the states. Not within the states. They can't have any regulations within a state. Their job is to basically make sure that the commerce flows openly and freely between the states. They're more of a referee. They're there to just make sure that states don't start bonding together and start creating, like what the northern states did to the southern states regarding the abolition movement and trying to create economic disadvantages for one to the other. The federal government should have actually stepped in and said, hey, you can't be doing that. But the federal government was complicit in doing it. They were the ones driving the tariffs and so forth. It's nice to know that they're doing things proactive to end slavery, but not at the expense of the Constitution. Right? What they should have been doing was they should have been actually trying to help grow, undo the Missouri Compromise. They could have easily undone that and said, you're not coming, you're not being forced to come in as a slave state. You have free determination to decide what you want to be. So that they end all of those things that were created to basically protect the institution of slavery that they put in place. Unconstitutionally, I might add. So you see my point? So here, when the abolition movement really started taking over at the end of the 30s, and the 40s. Nobody said, hey, well, let's get right here and get constitutional and undo the Missouri Compromise. They didn't do that. Isn't that ironic? What do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay. So in this course, well, there's a lot of things that we can discuss and so forth. What are your thoughts on, you know, the course, the curriculum? Is there something more we can add? Is there something else we can do that would make our efforts more efficacious?
Efficacious.
Yes.
I might have to look that up.
Effective and efficient.
I get it.
Okay, so
I totally agree with what you're saying, and I think that expounding on the issues with those things brings them to light as futility, and sticking to the core of, like we said before, the Constitution is the government's rule book. That's the contract that was made.
Right.
And that's what they're supposed to stick to. And we have to do more at the local level to ensure that the people at the bottom are the ones that are in control of their communities, and not allowing, and it, just like we talk about all the time, people get enticed, you know, and that's just human nature. But we have to be more vigilant about it, and we have to do it in places where we actually have effectiveness. Like you were talking about, a lot of people go try to get involved with the party to get state or do things at the federal level, and it's almost inaccessible. But the people that you have to look right in the eye in your neighborhood who know and have grown up in your community and have families and ties to those communities, that's where you can hold their feet to the fire and make sure that they understand, you know, what's expected of them.
I just looked. I took a quick glance at a Facebook page that had a meme on it. I'm just going to throw this in here because this is the epitome of the problem. This meme basically said, I think all taxes should be paused until there's no more fraud by government. They're talking about the blatant fraud. They're not talking about the fraud of exercising power they don't have the authority to do. And so that right there, you know, just reeks of illiteracy. Does that make sense? Because they're thinking that, okay, we're not going to pay these taxes for all the government that you shouldn't even be doing, where, you know, you're actually running, you know, taxpayer money out to, like, what they were doing in Minnesota to these shell companies and country or businesses and so forth, just like how Doge was basically going after all of these bad spending programs, what have you, right? Like AIDE or whatever. So my point is why don't you start looking at the Constitution and list all the things they shouldn't be doing, like, you know, minimum wage and regulating labor and regulating this, the environment, all sorts of things that they shouldn't be doing because they don't have the authority. That right there is
like
fraud.
The federal government giving money to the states to pay for Medicaid. That's the whole crux of the fraud, is
yes.
That the government, they were stealing money from the federal government through Medicaid because the federal government was paying them money to pay for medical.
Yeah, but which came first, the Medicaid or the fraud of Medicaid? And which is the real fraud? The existence of Medicaid.
The fraud is that it's not constitutional.
There
the
you go.
The United States government shouldn't be involved in medicine,
right?
In medical,
medical, or at all. So at Medicaid, Obamacare, Social Security, all those things are all unconstitutional. Before anybody gets all upset, I have to say this every time I say Social Security. Social Security has been the big deception, the big lie that has defrauded us, you know, over the course of generations. There are way too many people alive that have been lied to that would be hurt if we actually just ended it by turning it off. What we have to do is we have to actualize it. In other words, all these people that have been paid into it, they're going to get whatever their stipend is. And all the people that are just now paying into it, we will probably tell them, okay, you don't have to pay into this anymore. And we're going to come up with a different funding or different taxation coming out of the general taxation to basically say, this is our, not reparations, this is our, what do you call that? Our penance for, you know, doing something we should never have done. And end the Social Security tax along with, because the Social Security tax has two evil sides to it, right? There's the direct tax of the citizen, and the employer has to pay the other half.
Right.
And so then all of a sudden the employer will no longer have to pay that. We'll just come out, because just look at it this way. The money that we're not spending on education, the money that the federal government's not spending on all these, even the Department of Defense, if we actually shut down the Army and the Air Force, because they're, nothing that they're doing today is within the constitutional realm. They're not effectively executing the laws of the Union. They're not effectively, you know, ending insurrections, nor are they repelling the invaders. The one thing that the Army is designed to be federalized for is to repel invaders. So the existing Army bases right now should be completely shifted, their mission, everything else. All strategic missions and even tactical missions need to be shifted over to the Navy if it deals with anything outside the United States. Because the Navy is the force that actually has the responsibility of securing our external security. Give the Navy what it needs to do its job. In other words, yeah, the Air Force, most of those assets and resources will just be handed over. All those people that are in the Air Force, they'll become Navy pilots, and they will then, and same thing with the Army, those people that would be transferred over for the strategic stuff. But the point is that they don't need to have these monstrosity administrations and all these different commands all over the place to doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. And it would downsize the defense costs dramatically. And I mean dramatically, folks. So
what do you think our adversaries would do in that situation?
Well, we would still have an awesome...
Back to the Constitution, so we'll just leave them alone.
No, so we still have an awesome force. The Navy can do it all. I mean, they can man our Minutemen system. They can man all of our strategic defenses.
I'm talking about all of the military bases we have all over the world that are unconstitutional. We shouldn't have military bases.
I agree.
In all these foreign countries.
I agree that we shouldn't in some cases, like in Germany, because the reason we had those was post-war and to basically help subsidize the Germans and the Japanese in rebuilding and so forth. You're absolutely right, but we do have a need to have bases all over Europe, Asia, and so forth, so that we can deploy and have a deployed force. So that's why we would still need those, because the Navy still has a mission of guarding the interest of the United States, which our commerce is a key interest, making sure that our commerce flows freely. Now, we should have been broadcasting for a century, at least, that any commerce that does not carry the American flag, we're not protecting.
All right.
Okay, now watch all the European nations that have been basically receiving the blessing and the benefit for having a naval fleet out there. Now say, hey, you know, how much would it cost to, you know, to make sure you can guard our ships too? Oh, okay, well now you're helping.
Isn't that crazy? We used our armed forces to stop the Somali pirates from taking other countries' ships, and now they're in our country. Taking right out the kitty.
Yeah. Well, so there's some irony, and it's really pathetic. These are paradoxes that we need to start facing. But I honestly look at, you know, when we look at our role in the world, it is not to be involved in how these governments are operating. We're here to be the exemplar for the people of the world. If people want to enjoy liberty and they don't want to be tossed to and fro from, you know, one despot to another, then they can, you know, work and have an open and free election to say, we want to become a state in the United States. There's no reason why we're even involved in the UN. That's unconstitutional. So,
Absolutely. So
what started this was this idea, you know, that somebody put it out there that, you know, well, let's stop, you know, the fraud the spending on literal fraud that is just, you know, blatantly out fraud, but the unconstitutional governments that have been assumed, these different roles, responsibilities, powers, property, blah, 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 all of these things that they've assumed is equally fraud, and they don't see it that way. And so the point is we have to start helping. That's why we need constitutionalists out there in social media coming up with, and actually, you know, I have a page, if you've got the Reclaiming the Republic website up. If you go to the Take Action page, I'm pretty sure it's on the Take Action page, that if you go to the bottom of the Take Action page, I have some memes that I put up there that anybody could use. Anybody could grab one of these and start posting these in social media. I would love to see a repository of social media memes that we could actually have, and maybe that's what we'd call that page. You know, hey, instead of complaining about, you know, the blatant fraud, let's complain about all of the government that has been assumed, or all these roles, responsibilities, powers that the government's assumed that's equally fraud. Let's start
enable and facilitate the fraud.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you've seen some of these social media memes, but I love the Deuteronomy chapter 19 one, because there's plenty of times where we see people come out and say, hey, this person, you know, had a prostitute or what have you, because there was a senator in Alabama that was accused of, you know, seeing, you know, doing something. And, I mean, that person that made that accusation, that said that person raped somebody, I think it was a rape or something like that, a statutory rape, where it basically ruined that senator's run. He did not make it. And so bottom line, that person that made that accusation never saw the, you know, never was held to the justice that they should have been held to. And I believe that technically, when somebody comes forward and says, hey, this person's committed a crime, then if they've made that accusation and if it doesn't get proven in court, then they should serve that case. In other words, they should serve the penalty of their accusation. That goes back to Deuteronomy. It keeps people from lying, and it keeps people from being able to basically, you know, create a distraction because, you know, is it worth it? You know, and there are ideologues. I don't care. I'll go to jail for 8 years just to make sure that guy doesn't go to the Senate. That's how evil these people think, because the ends, they'll kill. As a matter of fact, you know, Charlie Kirk was a victim of, you know, an ideologue that felt that he was too big of a threat. And so that just goes to show you where people are actually perceiving the conservative movement as a threat. But really, let's look at what the conservative movement is doing. It's not really dismantling anything. Even if Trump, because there have been people that said, oh, well, Trump can just get rid of the Department of Education. Well, let's watch him do that. The next president will equally restore it. And then when he does, he will make sure that every board, every nail, every resource that goes into that department is wired ideologically the way they want them, instead of all of some of the misfits that they may have in there. I mean, even in colleges, I think I saw this survey where out of 1,000 some odd professors at a college, like, you know, 12% of them were Republican or conservative inclined. If you started with a college today, ideologically, to say this is going to be a liberal college, then the only people you would hire would be liberal. And you'd actually be able to make sure that you had 100% liberal instead of, you know, slowly, you know, migrating that way. Anyway, does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
All right. But suggestions. Is there something more we can do in looking at the content? Taking out time. I used to take every Friday, but that took away from the content. And I called it a marketing day because I had to highlight all of the things that the government is doing, and what they're doing is completely unconstitutional. The money they're spending is unconstitutional. So, you know, I'm just highlighting the fraud, the fraudulent government, to say, what's it going to take, folks? What is it going to take before you actually start standing up and demanding constitutional compliance? Because that is the only way we're going to actually obtain the government that we deserve, the government we're supposed to have. Anything more we can do?
Well, sir, if I had something that I could just lay out there and
do that. Let me give you one thing, because you're kind of working on something. I believe that there's groups, churches, if there's, you know, shows, radio shows, news, little, you know, whatevers out there, like acclaiming, making an appeal to heaven, because I know you're kind of working on something like that, that if there are other groups out there that can actually say, hey, you know what, we don't have the time to give you the content, but you need to tune into Reclaiming the Republic. It's not like we're making any money here. They're not making our pockets richer. The reality is, the real problem I have with most people, the real reason that they don't want to help, is because they're making money off of the problem.
I think what we need is, and while we're in that mode, what my vision is that we have people in all varied locations who have access to the same information, and using the network effect, we can multiply the amount of people in different local communities. Like you always talk about why counties matter most. You had a few people in your county who were focusing on these constitutional compliance principles, then you could start making headway in your local community. And that's what it's going to take, because just like you talked about, there's no way that the people at the top, sociopaths, gravitate towards power. And that's what you get with the parties and the state and federal politics, is you get a bunch of people who want power and control and wealth and whatever those things bring to their lives. What we need is local action of people in their communities addressing issues that are within their communities and getting constitutional compliance. We're guaranteed a Republican form of government throughout the whole country. We need to start enacting that authority and that responsibility that we have in our local communities. So if everybody had a Reclaiming the Public chapter in their community, then we can start making headway on those principles.
Okay, so do you think there'd maybe be merit in having a conversation of doing some of that? Because bottom line, I've actually presented the idea that when people start working local, we actually have a great opportunity of moving that organization into the local radio, because what you're going to be doing in, you know, putting the pressure on in the county and so forth, you're creating, you know, this direct relationship with radio and making local radio relevant, because you're talking about local news. You're talking about, you know, impacting, going and holding our public servants accountable in organizing and holding the state accountable and so forth, because people want to hear those things. People want to hear, they want to see the successes. Does that not make sense?
Oh, it absolutely makes sense. And that's why a lot of people are frustrating. And I see a lot of fractioning, like you talk about in the conservative movement.
Right.
Once they felt like, oh, Trump won, so we won. And now they're fighting each other.
Yeah.
Just constantly over who's going to, you know, be able to say this. And this is the conspiracy theory that I think is
right.
What the problem is. And that one's what the problem is. But then I'm focusing on the actual issue of the government overreach from the Constitution.
Yeah, I get it.
With their oath,
I get
to
it.
The Constitution.
I get it. We got to go. Thank you so much, Sean. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley with Reclaiming the Republic. We need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description version of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.